and welcome to Legal News Reach, the official podcast for the National Law Review. Stay tuned for a discussion on the latest trends in legal marketing, SEO, law firm best practices, and more.
I'm Rachel, the editorial manager for the National Law Review.
And I'm Jessica, a web content specialist for the National Law Review, and we're the co-hosts for Legal News Reach.
In this episode, we're excited to talk to John McDougall, president of McDougall Interactive. John, would you like to introduce yourself to the listeners?
Yeah, sure. So welcome, everyone, and appreciate it for the opportunity to talk to you guys today. And I started in 95 at my father's ad agency selling websites. You know, back then, whatever the heck those were, right? In 95, they gave me a laptop and said, go sell websites. And I'd drive around with a phone jack and, you know, dial up over AOL in people's offices, and they thought that was just crazy, you know. So I kind of fell in love with it early on and have been doing SEO ever since. So now just starting a class called talkmarketing.com, Talk Marketing Academy. So in addition to the agency, McDougall Interactive, we do coaching and teaching like that too.
Excellent. We're excited to get your perspective on SEO. So just sort of moving into our first topic here, with how much Google tends to change and how much people's habits with, you know, searching tends to change, why is it so hard to do SEO now?
Well, it's just so much to do. I mean, it's like you need a small army to do it. You need organizational skills. And early SEO, you could be a little ADD and just fly around and go to some conferences and do some, you know, pull it off yourself. I don't know, somewhere in the 90s, I made a hearing aid website over a weekend. I did the logo, designed the website, built it and hand-coded in HTML, wrote the pages for different brands of hearing aids, and launched it over the weekend. And then it was ranking in Yahoo, like number one for hearing aids. And then a company bought my client. And then I started working for that company. So it was that easy almost back in the day. And now, I mean, my God, we'll get into it more as we go here, but there's just 1,000 different things that can influence your SEO.
So moving more into like legal industry specifics, is there a different approach for different types of law firms? So personal injury or maybe more business oriented law firms in terms of like website marketing?
Yes and no. You know, meaning certainly if you're personal injury, you know, I don't have to sell a personal injury attorney on the idea of SEO, right? They know that their customers are out there searching. You know, if you get bit by a dog or injured by a dangerous drug or medical device, you don't necessarily even want to ask someone for a referral if it's embarrassing or if you're in a rush or, you know, whatever it is. So you're going to search Google. It's a no-brainer. On the other side, with business lawyers, there are some very big companies that, you know, business attorneys will say, they're just not going to search Google for me. And that may be true, but later they tell you, but if they do search for this certain niche kind of thing, I'd like my thought leadership content to be there at the top of Google. So ironically, I think that sometimes, you know, having good content that's search optimized is maybe not as important as, you know, as the obvious thing with personal injury, like I said, but pretty close to similar importance, right? So if it's intellectual property or, you know, international law, different things that are really important, if you're going to impress the general counsel or some really high level people, they might want to see that you're in search, not just, you know, in conversations with them. And even if it's not so much they're searching Google when they get to your site, there should be an active, either a blog on your site or a separate offsite blogs on niche topics that really just show, highlight your thought leadership. So my argument would be if you have to do that anyway, because you want to show you're a thought leader, well, at least put some effort into fast loading website, good title and meta tags, consistent content, if weekly, if not at least monthly. So some of the same things that you would tell a personal injury lawyer really do apply to business lawyers, just at a slightly less exaggerated pace. You might not go out and do link building, or like you probably will do PR, but maybe not PR for link building like you would with personal injury potentially. A lot of spreading your thought leadership content should involve good quality content that's optimized for the internet, you know, and that a lot of that is is for search. Some of it's for social media, but, you know, so a lot of the same rules apply at different levels of exaggeration.
Right. And so once lawyers really get their feet into creating this really great content and optimizing it for SEO, how do they then keep up with all the changes that Google makes to its algorithm?
They don't. No. they have to, you know, either hire an agency who keeps up with it or to help them and spoon feed what's most important to them. That would be one way. The other way, if they're going to be more do-it-yourselfers or the marketing department wants to keep up, you know, like I just have to keep reading things like Search Engine Land, Search Engine Journal, you know, HubSpot's blog, things like that. You know, you're going to really need to keep up and then ultimately go test things because just reading isn't enough. And an agency has the benefit of testing across lots of sites. So for, as an example, in 2012, I had like, I don't know, 27 clients or something like that. And Google Penguin hit, which was an algorithm Google designed to discredit low quality links. One day I was looking at my ranks and I said, geez, this doesn't look good. Something's going on here. And I asked a guy that was a subcontractor of mine. He said, no, I'm not seeing anything unusual. He's like, wait a minute, let me call you back. He goes and looks at his rankings across, he had hundreds of clients. He had a lower price point in the strategy of more clients. And he said, oh crap, we're seeing like significant drops consistently across all clients. It turned out that Google had just dropped the bomb of Google Penguin on people. And they, I think later they maybe regretted it. I'd like to think that they went too fast with it. So, you know, by having multiple clients and asking a subcontractor who had lots of clients, we're able to see that this is not a made up trend. This is not our imagination. You know, this is how we're keeping up with trends, is networking with peers. And then, of course, it broke within hours or days on Search Engine Journal and Search Engine Land and things. But we were seeing it in you know, in multiple clients' data. So if you're a law firm and you have one site, just be aware of that, you know, you should be looking to others that have multiple clients or certainly at least the top, you know, SEO media, you know, magazine sites online, you know, so that you can see what the trends are.
How can law firms stay consistent when creating content?
I think an editorial calendar is key. That I would say is at the beginning of it is, you know, make a list as simple as, okay, we're going to create an article a week or 2 to 4 articles a week, whatever. I mean, you guys obviously at National Law Review have huge amounts of content, but you need to think like a magazine. You know, you need to think like that. And if you don't, you won't be consistent. So that's at the heart of it. And then find ways to, you know, get either the attorneys involved or the agency involved with the attorneys to generate content around topics. And we can get into that more in a minute.
We were going to ask you about each social media type, mostly because so many law firms now are realizing, if they didn't before, which they probably didn't, but yeah. I think law firms and clients in general are realizing we can make the internet and like social media work for us. And they're paying attention to what those numbers mean now. So yeah. I want to know, you know, I want to attack each type that we're seeing more common output with. So like podcasts, how does that help with SEO?
Yeah. And so I would tie that again back into that last question, because I think it's critical that people understand that you can do SEO driven content through podcasting and video. If you're not using transcripts for your podcasts and your videos, you're just probably not getting as much mileage as you could be. And a lot of people will make like a show note for your podcast, and that's good. You know, a little couple paragraphs or something. In this episode, you'll see this and some bullet points. But in addition to that, having the transcript as an option, you can even make it so it can disappear and appear on the page so the search engines can still read it. But having content with attorneys that are thought leaders isn't always easy to get with having them write. You know, some of them are going to be rock stars. They're going to write. Some of them just aren't. Some attorneys will write, some won't. And you might have categories that, well, the intellectual property lawyer is writing just fine, but the international law or whatever law is, the person's an amazing speaker, but a terrible writer, or just lazy, or just doesn't have time to write, whatever it is. So if you do audio interviews, you can get a short business-oriented podcast. Sure, podcasts are often 26 minutes or half an hour, some are an hour long, but they don't have to be that way. You know, if you want SEO and consistent content, you can just do shorter ones, because every minute of podcasting, we get 130 words. Even a 10 minute, say 12 minute podcast, you can get like 1500 words. That's a really robust, deep piece of content. And the attorney's just talking, you know, they do that all the time. They're good at it. So if your marketing team handles that and just knocks those out, to be consistent, you got to let go a little bit and maybe occasionally do the half hour, the hour podcast. You're going to get a lot of consistent content. Then like you guys, you can turn some of that into short YouTube videos or do remote YouTube videos or in-person YouTube videos that are like a minute, 2 minutes. You know, what is this particular law? You know, what is Brexit even? You know, cover some of the things that if you're a search engine algorithm, it's going to be good to see on your website that you just, you know, ask the question, like, what is Brexit? Maybe somebody on there to Amazon Alexa or Google Home is like, hey, Alexa, what is Brexit? You know, and maybe that's not your ideal customer, right? So, I mean, this might relate more to personal injury or something. But if you want to rank in Google, you want to cover topics completely, meaning what is the topic? You want to cover all of those stages of the buyer's journey from they're just, what is Brexit or do I have side effects, to then hire, you know, dangerous drug X lawyer, you know, at the bottom of the funnel. So if you're going to cover all of the gamut of the way people are asking questions, you know, you're going to need lots of content. And if you're waiting around for, you know, attorneys to write that aren't necessarily writers, sometimes it works great. And certainly some big law firms have pulled it off with many blogs, but that's one way to do it, is just really be robust in picking content for podcasting and videos, organizing it and getting the technical stuff done. So they just show up on a Zoom call and it's all recorded.
It's really interesting that you mentioned podcasting and combining video with that, because that's what we are doing. But it's also like having the transcript for a podcast episode is the web content accessibility guideline that you're supposed to have on a website. You're usually supposed
you
to have
it anyway, like a, to be ADA compliant.
Yeah. So to know it helps the SEO is always good. So I'm sure it would tell people listening to this that, hey, that extra work actually does help you. And, you know, the people who need to access your site, if they have, you know, any kind of disability or vision issues.
You'd be suited by them anyway. Yeah. So any exactly. argument of like, oh, this is just for SEO, it's a big pain in the butt, we got to go, you know, transcribe all this content. But you say, geez, there are banks and different people. I heard of a snowshoe company by one of my subcontractors, a web development company in Vermont. They said they know of a snowshoe company that just got sued for ADA compliance. And then they said there was a boating show and some attorneys that wanted to get some lawsuits around ADA compliance went to the show, got the list, and started suing everyone on the show that didn't have disability compliant booths and websites. So they were going to the websites of all the people at the boat show and then say, oh, this isn't ADA compliant, let's go after them. All of your content should have an alternative version. Even an image should have, as you hover over it, an alt tag. And that was true. Pretty sure in the 90s, we're adding alt tags. All of that stuff, I think, is part of the future of SEO. It's been there, but I think it's going to continue to be, you really can't ignore it anymore.
I think the pandemic especially made that very loud realization for so many people, not just the compliance part of a website, also just with this SEO, all these numbers and tactics you have to use now on your site, because that's where people are going. I mean, when the pandemic happened, you weren't going into a place, you were going to their site. So how has SEO changed besides like those couple of things? Are there any other characteristics you've noticed since the past year or so?
I'd say the competition level is huge because of the pandemic. My father, who had the ad agency, he sent me an article 6 months or a year ago. The Wall Street Journal said that essentially the Mad Men era is done, exacerbated by, you know, SEO and Google ads were, you know, building up and building up, more and more important. I think podcast ads have taken over more than radio ads. After the pandemic, it's like the nail in the coffin. Like now, most of advertising is controlled by the big Google, Facebook, you know, the big guns, Amazon for products, right? Because Amazon's basically a search engine for products. So those three alone, I mean, Google's a top five company. And, you know, the old control that ad agencies had is basically gone. Certainly the yellow pages, right? But, you know, TV, radio, print, I mean, the average, I mean, a lot of law firms use TV, but, you know, the small law firms, they're not using yellow pages and print ads or even as much billboards potentially. They have to ante up a lot of money for Google ads or SEO now, because it doesn't work well if you don't put good money into it. The Wall Street Journal is saying basically advertising is controlled by digital now. And what does that mean? That means there's a crazy amount of competition. So if we're doing SEO like I was a long time ago in hearing aids, you just cram it into the title and meta tags and throughout the page, you're done. You know, that's not the case anymore. Now type in something like Phonak hearing aids or Siemens hearing aids online or something, and then see the page that ranks. What is there? And it's probably, you know, God knows how many SEO agencies have helped hearing aid companies make like the ultimate page, the ultimate guide to hearing aids. You know, this like 10,000 word article. That's a big change. And, you know, we can go in more into some of the specifics, but that's more broadly what I think has changed. This competition is up and it's not going away anytime soon. I mean, what are you guys seeing with SEO overall? Are you seeing big changes or it's harder than ever? What do you see?
I would say probably one of the biggest things that we've seen make an impact in terms of like our clients' content, when we see things do particularly well, it's that they have, you know, really great keywords. So, you know, headers poses questions. The articles are long, so they have like about 1,200 words. And the thing that, and timeliness also seems to be a big contributing factor to content success. So if it comes to us, you know, around, you know, noon, rather than like 5 p.m. on a Friday, those articles tend to do way better than ones that are short, you know, that don't have like, you know, really great bullet points, really great formatting. I think in terms of people who are looking to sort of do well on our website and things like that, it's important to make your content really great for search engines. So, you know, and also really readable for people. So having really great headers. Friendly. Yeah. So having really great headers, you know, thinking about what people who like want to find your expertise, like what do they want to know about, and including that in your headers and things like that.
Definitely that content competition is huge now. I mean, we already get a lot of content just because we have so many clients that we want to, you know, put out their information. You know, if we have a Supreme Court decision that's huge, I mean, we'll get like multiple pieces on the same thing. And it's kind of a game of like who the slightest difference in formatting or word choices, keyword choices can really like make some articles do really well as far as viewership, just staying on the page and not bouncing, versus other pages that for some reason, even on the same topic, maybe it just didn't quite do the same level, you know, not as many views.
It's like a trifecta of things. It's like
get on the front end of the trend so that you're the one that gets shared. And that, and again, that historically SEO people like myself will be more focused on the backlinks than on the social shares. Sometimes one helps the other. So one of my best case studies, we wrote an article for a bank and it got onto NerdWallet. NerdWallet interviewed us, linked to the content, but it was all started with just sharing it on Twitter and Facebook. So we were sharing the content, we were doing social media, but we weren't holding our breath for it to do that much, except hoping we would get some people to link to the content. And we got backlinks from NerdWallet, which is like a massive financial website with a huge amount of credibility. Another one was lobsters. We ranked number two in Google for the single word lobsters. And I wrote an article because I have lobster traps and do fishing and things. And so I wrote an article, 100 fun facts about lobsters, and it got shared by the Huffington Post and a bunch of places. And suddenly this little restaurant near me got hundreds of thousands of views on a, you know, a silly page about lobsters with some historic photos and, you know, these crazy facts. Sometimes we'll use social media to get links, you know, just getting the visibility out there. And I agree that, you know, if you can get it out there faster, you're more likely to get all that to happen. We like a tool called Ahrefs for that, for looking at that. But Ahrefs is a cool tool for that. And you can look at your top pages and look by top pages by social shares and top pages by backlinks. So I would just recommend to the audience and to you guys, if you're not doing it, check out when you are like, we really want to rank for Brexit or the U.S. Constitution articles or whatever amendments to the Constitution, or is this constitutional, or whatever trending things are happening. You know, are you like number 4 or 5 or God forbid number 6, because top 5 is where I forget, it's like 67% of the eyeballs go. It used to be you want to be top 10 in Google. Now really top 5 is key. And number 1, of course, gets, you know, a huge amount of the lion's share of eyeballs and clicks. Do you get a lot of leads, do you think, from social media, or is that part of the process?
The vast majority of our traffic does come from SEO and from Google, but we definitely see a connection between the social outreach that we do. We have a pretty robust social media strategy and process where we try to, use certain hashtags that are relevant and also tag in specific people who we think would find the content to be specifically interesting to them. Social is definitely a big part of it, but it's just sort of like the larger picture of, it's just one of the things that we do. I think SEO is more important, but I think social kind of can tie into SEO in a way that the relevant people are finding it on a different channel.
One of the things I speak to, and I've done this with Jennifer actually on a webinar, is the 7 main factors of SEO that I believe people need to think about, like technical SEO, which is really a booming trend right now. A fast loading website is going to rank way better than a slow loading website, because even if you do everything right SEO wise otherwise, if it's slow loading, Google is not going to give you as good a ranking. So there's tech, that's number 1, is technical SEO. You can't have too many broken links or, you know, duplicate title and meta descriptions all over the place, or a slow loading website. Number 2, on page SEO, right? Adding the right keywords. It's not everything, and it's not like it used to be, but it's still on page SEO. And then content, fresh content, blogging content, depth of content is important. And then off page SEO, or what we call link building, which is essentially PR. You know, you need to get media sites or even small blogs to link to you and link to individual pages. And then number 4, user signals and user experience. And then user signals are more like, if you search Google for, you know, personal injury lawyer Boston, and up come the results, if your listings and the search engine results, the title and meta description that's there and the link, if those look boring, you know, somebody with a more clear call to action or a better value proposition or better written title and meta descriptions are going to get clicked more. That's a user signal that sends someone to, you know, Google owns their own results, so they know if people clicked, and then they know if people hit the back button and click back. So that's now baked into artificial intelligence to tell Google that, you know, users like or don't like your page, and you may go up or down because of that. So user signals and user experience, and then 6, social media that we just discussed, and 7, branding. So instead of just doing SEO like all those other things, or just adding keywords, people make the mistake that that's SEO. That's one piece of SEO, but really building a brand that's known for something. And you guys are known in, at least in, if you look at your backlinks and your social shares, again, Brexit, I think it was constitutional amendments. You guys get a lot of backlinks for that. So build your brand and be known for something, and then have some content that you really stand out for. That is more the future of SEO. Is you can't just do SEO, ironically. You need to be part of a brand.
The purpose of SEO and those tactics are good for people, because I think it makes the content more relevant. I think it makes things on the internet more valuable to people who need it. You know, everybody goes on the internet for information now, and now companies and websites are forced to make sure that they're actually valuable. They're not just filled with links for no reason. And, you know, short little things that aren't going to help someone. So I think, I don't know if everybody agrees with that, but I think it actually makes it better for the audience that's reading it and going to your site anyway. Personally, I think it's good.
Google's better at enforcing those things now. So that was sort of the goal always with the internet. But because we could just game the system, you know, certainly low-end SEO companies back in the day just get crappy links, build stupid pages that meant nothing. those tactics should be dead. Unfortunately, it's like, wow, no, it's so hard. Like, you didn't have to go that far, Google. Take some of those TV dollars or print dollars or event dollars, and actually, whether you pay agencies or do it internally, really train up and do it right. There's a lot of proven workflows for this stuff. You just have to trust that three of us and other people doing this stuff are people. We're not just making stuff up. You know, we're doing all those things we just discussed, and it takes time. Each one of them. Oh, add snippets to the site. You know, go into, you know, figure out Google Analytics 4. You know, use Google Search Console every week. You know, use SEMrush. Use Ahrefs. Okay, yeah, every day. You know, that can't be like a few hours a month. You know, that could be a few hours a day for, you know, just one person, much less just the writing, the social media. All this stuff is more time consuming now, but I like it. I think it's more developed. It's, you know, you have to be more aggressive. It's not as easy. I mean, there's certainly a lot to do. So that's the good news, is there's stuff to do that does work if you keep at it. But yeah, if you're not consistent, it's never going to work. You get those social shares and even sometimes backlinks from very relevant partners or related people, and Google can't miss that, you know? So yeah, it's all a win-win. Yeah, I could go off way off on that one, but sounds like you guys are really doing the right thing with it and repurposing that content. So good stuff.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. And we've had a great conversation with you, John. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the National Law Review's Legal News Reach podcast. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts for more episodes. For the latest legal news, or if you're interested in publishing and advertising with us, visit www.natlawreview.com. We'll be back soon with our next episode.